This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:16. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now we're moving on to a story about the heat. It really has been hot lately. And this is something that's happening in various cities around the world. Many are reporting the highest temperatures they've seen. So we thought we'd explore what this means for us and how our built environment as well as behavior might need to adapt.
We're so sorry. Clearly, we're going from cheerful story to cheerful story.
Yes, full of laughs today.
And I think this one is particularly tough because we are seeing it in headlines around the world, but I think we're also feeling it here. It's definitely something that we don't have to, kind of imagine too hard. It's something that is already happening. So a scientific journal, Nature Climate Change, reported that researchers believe that we're likely to see more deadly heat waves in the coming decades. And when I say we, I really mean humanity, so like all of us. And that therefore, it's essential that we prepare for heat events because rapid warming will take place. And if we look at the current rates of greenhouse gas emissions, the world will continue warming at current rates to more than 3 Celsius overall by 2100? 2100? I'm not
2100,
sure.
2100, I think, would be okay.
Okay. So, yes, by 2100. And if you look at what that 3 degrees is going to mean, there is a risk that our planetary systems will fail. There's a risk that we're irreversibly pushing our planet towards a much hotter state. And there is therefore an increasing risk of rapid and irreversible changes. Like I said, a laugh a minute here on the Evening Edition. So sorry.
Well, tiny bit of good news. According to our Malaysian Meteorological Department, or Met Malaysia, we're not yet in the midst of a heat wave. You have to hit 40 degrees for it to be considered a heat wave. That's as of July 21st. However, try telling that to those of us working from home when you don't have air conditioning. I don't know whether we'll quite agree.
Right now.
Yes.
Living through it.
But we are experiencing the southwest monsoon, which means that the climate is hot and dry. And this will last, well, great news, until the mid of September. So we're going to be looking at all of this within the lens of what we need to do, because clearly this is something that's happening more and more. Clearly, we often feel like we're not prepared and it keeps happening. So we're going to be speaking shortly with Dr. Renat Siu, who is a sustainability and climate change specialist. But we'd like to hear from you. What changes do we need to make to adapt to rising temperatures? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us via Zoom is Dr. Renat Siu, who is a sustainability and climate change specialist. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
How has climate change affected Malaysia's temperatures? What are some of the ways that this could be most apparent in daily life?
Well, I think obviously we have been experiencing warmer conditions. As you know, most of you know, a lot of our human activities, you know, from driving to industrialization, all of this actually releases, you know, greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, which traps heat, right? So as sunlight comes through the atmosphere, some are reflected back, while others are trapped as heat, right, within our atmosphere, thus increasing our temperatures. So in many ways, those living especially in city areas are definitely facing the brunt because of this phenomenon that we call a heat island effect, or urban heat island effect, you know, where, you know, you have obviously significantly warmer temperatures because of your surroundings. You have dense populations, concentration of pavements, buildings, infrastructure, as opposed to those who are living in rural areas, like where there's a little bit more shade, more tree, which cools the temperature a little bit more.
So ultimately, which parts of Malaysia are going to be most affected by the rise in temperature by the heat waves?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, I think predominantly those who are living in major cities. So we would expect, you know, like the Klang Valley, for example, which is so densely populated, to be really, you know, like feeling, you know, the heat wave as we speak. But also some parts of the northern and southern region as well, like say in Johor, even parts of Penang will be experiencing this. Yeah.
And which communities in particular are going to feel it the most?
Yeah, I would say that that's quite a broad spectrum. I think, you know, when we talk about heat wave, I think there's a need to really understand the pathways or the repercussions on what this would have, right, on local communities. For example, the farmers, especially those who are involved in, you know, like paddy farming or even in palm oil, what the heat wave does is that it leads to, you know, prolonged droughts, which is seasonal, but still it has an impact on things like agriculture use. Just to give you an example, palm oil, which is, you know, such a significant part of a Malaysian economy, in prolonged droughts, drought seasons, you actually don't get female flowers, which means that, you know, quite naturally your oil you would actually drop quite significantly. So it's situations like that, right, that really has an impact on, you know, how we think about, you know, the effects of heat wave. Another issue I think that needs to be brought up is with regards to water stress, which not a lot of people think about. You know, as temperatures start increasing, what happens is that areas that tend to get a little bit more rainfall or water don't get as much rain as they used to. And we have to think about, you know, what's going to happen then, right, to populations in Malaysia that actually rely on such water resource for things like irrigation or even for their day-to-day activities like cleaning, washing, you know, like taking a bath, shower, and so on and so forth. And all of this has repercussions in one form or another.
So is our current infrastructure and way of life able to accommodate this rise in temperature? And perhaps more specifically, for how long could we actually sustain this?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a lot of innovation that needs to take place in order for us to truly adapt, right, to the impacts of climate change, or in, you know, what experts would call the, you know, climate resilient. A lot of people have said that, you know, when we look at the COVID-19 pandemic, right, that has sort of panned out like in the past couple, you know, two years now, I think. A lot of people say that we were actually not ready for this because no one in their mind actually thought about it. So climate change, a lot of scientists and researchers are saying that impacts are going to be more severe and we have to start planning for this. And I just want to highlight that there are really two aspects in terms of preparation that we really have to start looking for. The first is really in terms of climate mitigation. That is, how do we actually cut down on our emissions significantly in order to bring down our greenhouse gases, which leads to all these effects around global warming, heat waves, and so on and so forth. The other aspect is really on the adaptation side. Assuming that temperatures are already increasing, and as you've rightly mentioned, you know, we seem to be on track towards hitting, you know, that surpassing that 1.5 degrees Celsius limit to treat. So how do we prepare for that? You know, like in terms of not just prolonged droughts, but also flood events, which we have heard so much of, right? Like in both the northern, the northern and southern regions of Malaysia, almost every year, like millions of dollars are lost. People have to be evacuated as a result of such floods and the damages that it brings. So there is a lot that needs to be done in terms of investing in the right infrastructure, just to make sure that we are prepared for these scenarios.
So in terms of those changes that need to be made, I want to hone in specifically on structural changes. What sorts of changes do we need to make in terms of our built environment to adapt to these temperatures?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different strategies that you know, like can be adopted. I suppose that, you know, in a more scientific or technical manner, we call this heat island reduction strategies. So for example, in your built environment, you could opt for things like green or cooler roofs, where you can plant crops like you know, like that can feed you, or even things like looking at increased vegetation or planting of trees, which obviously provides a lot of shade and leads to that cooling effect. But also very interestingly, there is this new branch of study that we call biomimicry. So this is where architects would actually look at what they consider nature-based solutions. So one common example, or rather one of the most cited example, is this architect, Michael, who has actually studied the thermal setting effects, right, of termites and how, you know, termite molds actually work. And there's this infrastructure in Zimbabwe, it's called the East Gate Building, that is literally designed in the shape of a termite mold, which provides a lot of cooling effects. So there are tons of opportunities like that where we can study and look at nature, because nature does provide us with a lot of solutions. And it's really thinking about how do we hone in, right, on trying to understand how nature works and how can we actually shape and design our built environments in such a way that, you know, we can coexist, you know, with our ecosystem.
Of course, one of the struggles that we have, particularly with a city that is as sprawling in some ways as KL, is redesigning, is rethinking what is already there. You know, we can't even seem to figure out our sidewalks. So I'm not sure I'm worried about being able to redesign for heat. You know, what are the complications there? You know, how can we overcome that?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it does boil down to stakeholder engagement. I suppose in a Malaysian context, you have quite a wide spectrum of people. You have those that are really initiated and really want to bring about a change, all the way down to those who, you know, they have heard about the issue, they sort of have an understanding of it, but they're just not motivated enough to move. So I think it's important to start off with that sort of advocacy, you know, awareness raising, to maybe just to have, you know, like dialogues, right, with people who are involved, say, in, you know, the master planning of buildings, to talk to architects, engineers. Of course, this is not going to, you know, happen overnight. You know, as people say, Rome was not built in a day. Like, it's definitely a progressive journey that we all have to take. But, you know, like, let's continue to be optimistic that one of these days, like, you know, perhaps Malaysia could potentially be a leader, right, in the space of sustainable design.
I'd love to see that. On an individual level, do you have any tips that we can use to cope with all of this, or perhaps even lifestyle changes that we might need to make?
Absolutely. In fact, today is actually Earth Overshoot Day. And what that means basically is that it's really a time for us to take a step back to contemplate on how we are actually using our, you know, resources, and whether we're actually overshooting the limit. There's always a certain threshold in terms of, you know, how much we can consume or produce, right, in order to meet the demands of our population. So in terms of, you know, our lifestyle changes, I think there are a lot of things that we can do. You know, we just have to be mindful about our consumption. So a lot of people have moved towards, you know, more of a vegan lifestyle. They've cut down on meat consumption, the way that we travel as well. Like, I think there's a lot to be said around, you know, the importance of carpooling or using public transportation, you know, where you can. Of course, this needs to coexist with our built environments as well. Like, walkability needs to be something that we have to consider and to make sure that it's conducive for Malaysians, right, to opt for. And of course, there are quite a broad of, you know, range of other things, like around sustainable fashion, right? So not just constantly buying new clothes, but just really rethinking about how you can repurpose you know, some of your older clothes that, and reuse or donate it. All of that adds up at the end of the day.
Dr. Renat, thank you for speaking with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Renat Siu, Sustainability and Climate Change Specialist, speaking to us about really our rising temperatures and the sorts of adaptations and changes that we need to make to the environment, the built environment around us, to cope. Do send your thoughts our way. What sorts of changes do you think we need to make? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening. Well, coming up after this, actually, we have Popcorn Culture. I thought we were done, but we're not. And on Popcorn Culture, we're going to be talking about movie stars and the roles that brought them to where they were. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.